I will not keep you long tonight. We'll deal with a few verses and hit some good themes, and then we'll call it a night. So, verse 10 of chapter 1 of the book of Titus, chapter 1, verse 10. Titus has established for Titus the job and the responsibility of leaving him in Crete to appoint elders. He gives the qualifications for the elders of the husband of one wife, and the believers should be in order and faithful children. And then it must be above reproach, must not be arrogant, must not be greedy for the money of the church or greedy of any kind of gain of self. Anybody who leads spiritually must be what the message is. And so he must be void of any kind of self-seeking goals, whether it's money, whatever it is. And the reason is given down in verse 10. He must hold fast to trustworthy word is taught. He's got to be learning. He's got to be taught himself. He needs to be growing in truth so that he can communicate that truth. And then it says, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine and able to rebuke, notice, able to rebuke those who contradict it. And those who rebuke or those who contradict sound doctrine have always been with us. They have always been with us through the centuries. And then he rails upon them in verse 10. And this is strong language, and I don't think false teachers should be the theme of every message, but certainly there's places in Scripture where Paul is very strong against those who do not teach the truth. Because I'm telling you, they bind people up in bondage by what they teach. There's no worse bondage than spiritual bondage. There's just no worse bondage that's as bad as that. Verse 10. For there are many, notice they're not just a few of them, there are many who are insubordinate, do not submit to authority, insubordinate, empty talkers, vain and empty in what they say. They are deceivers, and especially those of the circumcision party, those are the Jewish believers, or in this case, the Jewish non-believers that infiltrate these churches. Now, let's talk about that particular group because that was Paul's particular aim. What was it about the Jewish circumcision party that was infiltrating this church? Either they were telling the believers that you had to be saved, yes, by the grace of Christ, but you had to add effort to the deal. You had to have some kind of law in there to be saved. You've got to become Jewish in order to be saved. The equivalent today is, for those who teach, you have to be physically baptized in order to be saved. Those who teach, you have to teach speak in tongues in order to be saved. Those who teach that you have to, whatever, any kind of thing you put on the end, it adding to the grace of God is law. But they also taught something else. Now that you're a Christian, now you are to submit under the law. They also brought this legalistic type teaching. And notice what he says, verse 11. They must be silenced. Strong language. They must be put down. Notice, since they are upsetting whole families. Now, when you see whole families, forget the modern translation of that. It doesn't mean families like your family and my family. These churches met in people's homes. So this family was really the family of God as it met in John's home or Wilbur's home or Russ's home. Buildings like this, church buildings, didn't exist in the 3rd and 4th century. So that the church met in small pockets of house churches. So in essence, it said this was upsetting entire churches. Churches that instead of relying fully on the grace of God and the grace of Christ and the cross and the life of Jesus being lived out, were now trying to pull this religious thing off, and these churches were failing, as any church fails that tries to live it by effort. He says they are upsetting whole families by teaching for shameful gain what they ought not to teach. Now, when you see shameful gain, the first thing we think about is the money that these guys want or get. And it might be money, but I think it's something more. Shameful gain isn't necessarily what goes in the preacher's pocket or shameful gain what comes to him. I want you to think about this on a broader spectrum. There are churches that worship growth. That if there's 1,000 members, they're failing. There are churches that adopt strategies to grow that are worldly. Campaigns, promotionals that are nothing more than business tactics to grow your church. There are companies, and I get advertisements on the internet all the time of and I know, John, you're going to say again, what's wrong with that? Years ago, I was preaching, and I said, there's companies out there that will show you how your church grow, and John turned to his mother and said, well, what's wrong with that? Well, what's wrong with that is if you're Goodyear Tire Company, well, fine, get you a company to help you grow your business, but that's not the church. We're not an organization, we're an organism. And if our focus is numerical numbers, then let's adopt the world's strategies to get them in. Shameful gain, I think, is more than just what the preacher wants it in for himself. I think it's the idea that big is more and better and all along that comes with more offerings and more business, and these mega churches get huge and they get hugely in debt, and then the least little thing comes along, half of them leaves, and then they're in a mess. And then the preacher's preaching in order to get a salary and to pay the bills, and so he's saying exactly what the church wants him to say. And do you see the down path of that? So when it says they preach for shameful gain, don't think it's just maybe the gain for the preacher gets, but the gain of the congregation. You know why the Jews hated Paul? Because when Paul would come into a town, the number one hot spot to evangelize was the synagogue. In the synagogue, there was a group within the synagogue called God-fearing men. They were Gentiles who were interested in the idea of one God, monotheistic religion. They wanted one God. They knew the gods of the Greeks were too many. They knew the Roman gods were phony. They were tired of the cesspool of morality they lived in. The Jewish lifestyle of ethical and moral, it attracted them. They knew that there was one God. And so they listened to the Jewish priests. They listened to the clergy, and they were attracted to Judaism. That is the hot spot for the gospel in the first century. So Paul goes in and preaches the gospel, and guess what happens to the synagogue attendance for the priests? It goes straight down. He loses his members. Now, if you want to get a preacher riled up, just steal his flock. They all go over to where the gospel is. That's why they hated Paul, because he was emptying their churches. So they were coming in, trying to win them back, or create this Christian-Jewish merger and get their crowds back. Whether that crowds meant offerings for them, or whether it meant self-esteem, whether it meant glory from a whole bunch of people, whether it meant I'm in here so everybody can see me, and the more see me, the happier I am. Whatever motives for the growth of the church, it better not be anything worldly or because of what the preacher wants. So shameful gain, here it is. It goes on and says, one of the Cretans of the island of Crete, they were on the island of Crete, the Cretans, he quotes one of their own poets. A poet of their own, said, Cretans are always liars. They're evil beasts. They are lazy gluttons. That was a poet of describing the people. These were the people that were coming out of this culture, were filling this church. These churches, these hundreds of churches all through Crete. And Paul says, notice verse 13, they're right. These Cretans are lazy gluttons. They are liars. They're evil beasts. That's pretty slap-down profiling, isn't it? Is that like politically incorrect to say that? Well, Paul says that this testimony is true. His answer to the churches, his answer to the clergy of those churches, notice, rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound, stable, secure, notice, in the faith. Not in the church, but in the faith. Because if a person's sound in the faith, they'll be at the church. If they're sound in the faith, they'll support and help grow the body of Christ. So his focus is sound in the faith. Verse 14, we're just going to get to the end of the chapter. Not devoting themselves Well, let's stop and go back because I think we missed something. Notice in verse 13, it says, rebuke them sharply. Who is the rebuking going to? I thought for years it was to the false teachers. It's not to the false teachers. Rebuke them sharply is the congregation within itself. It's very important in Bible interpretation to identify the theys and thems, to make sure you understand who's being spoken to and about. So when it says, and I'll show you why, it says rebuke them, not the false prophets, the empty talkers, the deceivers. Verse 11, remember it says, they shall be silenced, but they will not be silenced by your rebuking them. Proverbs says, if you rebuke a fool, you will get nothing but wrath poured back onto you. Have you ever corrected somebody who ended up biting you back? So he's not saying rebuke them. The way they're silenced is that the congregation is rebuked for believing any of that. Because if you want to cut off the false teachers, cut off their audience. If the congregation is enlightened to these lies, they won't be listening anymore. And when a guy doesn't have an audience, he shuts up. That's what it's all about. So look at in verse 13. Rebuke them are the church members to make sure that they're sound in the faith. And then verse 14 is the church members again, not devoting themselves to Jewish myths and the commands of people who turn away from the truth. That's to the congregation, so that they would not devote themselves to any legalistic practice or legalistic mindset. That they would not devote themselves to the modern day myth that if you give financially, you're going to be blessed based on what you give. That they're not going to devote themselves to the modern myth of believing that if you read your Bible more, you'll get closer to God. That if you pray more, you'll get closer to God. Those are myths. The whole Jewish system is set up on the basis of causation. You know what causation is? It's you do this, he does that. That you cause him to do things in your life by what you do. That's the law. That's what Joshua and Moses told the people. If you obey the law, the Lord, if you obey the law and the Lord, you will prosper in the land. That's law. That's Jewish teaching. That's legalistic framework. And here he's telling them to reject it. The Jewish myth that you can get blessings by what you do. It isn't like these tall tales of Jewish stories of great Jews. That's not the myths. The Jewish myths is the law of the Old Testament, and the myth is that you can become spiritual by obeying. If we could become spiritual by obeying, then we don't need grace. But we have grace, we don't have to try to be spiritual anymore. I remember Miss Bowers, and I often think about her, especially when I go eat sushi. And I remember calling out to her a number of times, and she knew the thing to do, and I called her out. I said, Miss Bowers, I want you to try to be Japanese. And I'd say it 3 or 4 times. You remember? Finally, she'd say, I don't have to try. I am Japanese. See? You don't have to try to be a Christian. You don't have to try to be a good Christian. You are a Christian. This is who you are. So we live out of who we are, but these myths, these Jewish myths, are simply the commands of people who turn away from the truth. The truth that you have been crucified with Christ, the truth that you've died, the truth that he lives in you. And when you try to live the Christian life by effort, you're turning away from grace. And he's saying, don't do that. And oh, how we want to do that, do we not? Oh, how our hearts go back to the law. We embrace the whole effort thing, especially if it's been in you all your life. Let's go on and finish the chapter. Notice verse 15. To the pure, all things are pure. To the defiled and unbelieving, there is nothing that is pure. So don't be afraid to rebuke. He's telling them, rebuke the congregation. Because when there's purity out there, those who are truly saved will listen and respond. Those who are not truly saved, they will not listen anyway. I love what Mac used to say, Brother Mac, at our old church. He said he got to a point in his life, he's just going to tell them like it is. Because he's found that church members, if they don't like what he says, they're just going to reach up and turn their hearing aid off. He's just going to turn it off. So say it. Rebuke. Because to the pure heart, they'll respond to that. But to the undefiled and lost, and he's going to put these teachers in the camp of not even being saved. To the pure, all things are pure. But to the defiled and unbelieving, there's nothing pure. But their minds and their conscience are defiled. So preach righteousness and preach rebuking to the truth and get them back to sound doctrine, because those who are pure will run after you and they will listen and they'll respond and they'll be set free. Those who are sitting there and are not saved, you're not going to rescue them anyway, because the basis of their life is impurity. See? You preach, you know what I know what we preach to? We preach to the core of man, the very basic heart of man, way down deep in the very constitution of who you are. Because who you are isn't what you look like, how old you are, anything in your station in life or whatever that is. Who you are is what God has made you way down deep. And when we were born in Adam, lost. And when God changed us, he transformed us by going down to the very constitution and crucifying us, bearing us, and planting his life at the very core of us. And I'm preaching to the life of Jesus inside of you, see? That's what I'm preaching. I'm really not preaching to you. I'm preaching to Christ in you. And if he's in you, you're going to hear this kind of preaching and rejoice. That's what he says. To him that is pure, all things are pure. In the context of the flow of the passage, that's what he's talking about. Notice verse 16. They profess to know God, but they deny him by their works. These guys talk all about how much they know God, and in the end, look at their lives, look what they do. They contradict everything that God is all about. They are detestable, they are disobedient, they are unfit. They have not been fitted for any good work because God is not in them. Man cannot work the works of God. Only God can work the works of God. And if God is not in them, then there is no good work that can come out of them. Now, there can be a lot of effort, though, and churches can grow to the thousands, and they can get on the TV and the radio, and they can look sharp and wear the sharp suits and say the sharp things, and you think this thing is as slick as oil, man. It's just slick as oil. And the whole thing in the end will be burned up with the fire of the judgment of God, because God was never in that. God is in the house churches. He's in the assembly of those who have put him first and love him and have been made pure by the blood of the Lamb. Okay, that's it.